Als ich den letzten Rest Erde von meinen Füßen abwasche, durchfluten mich eine Menge Gedanken. Gerade eben noch lag ich eingehüllt in einen Plastikmantel auf der Erde unter einem Grab, lauschte der Stimme einer syrischen Verstorbenen, die gegen das Assad-Regime aufbegehrte und durch eine Explosion ums Leben kam. Hier, an diesem ruhigen, andachtsvollen Ort, inmitten all der Gräber, empfand ich sie, eine von Millionen Toten in Syrien, nicht als Zahl, als Fakt oder Bericht. Nein, ich sah ihr Leben als Individuum vor mir. Und auch die Konfrontation mit meinem eigenen Tod, die im Alltag kaum Platz hat, der hier aber Raum geboten wird. Ich war berührt von diesem poetischen Moment, traurig und zugleich wütend, wegen der Sinnlosigkeit des Kriegs, eines Kriegs, der so viele Opfer fordert. Mit diesen Gedankensplittern verlasse ich dieses Refugium der Stille und begegne Tania El-Khoury, der kleinen zierlichen Libanesin, die auf einer Bank in den Katakomben des Einstein-Kultur sitzt. Alles in allem ist es eine so einfache, aber starke Idee.
The idea came to me at the beginning of the Syrian uprising, when I saw a photo of a Syrian woman digging a grave in her garden. And there was a comment, it was a photo that was circulating on social media, and there was a comment about the fact that this is, they're digging to bury their son. And I was very touched by it, but also wanted to know more, like wanted to know why exactly people are doing that. Is it because there was a lot of death and they couldn't, there was not enough space in burials and like actual official cemeteries, or is it because they were scared for something? And I started researching it out of interest and finding different reasons. And I was very interested by the fact that this specific regime, the Assad regime, as a dictatorship, you can't get rid of it after you die. It actually follows you after your death by trying to change the narrative of how you died, or forcing you into a different narrative, or forcing the surviving family to betray those who died by signing statement that they were killed by, not by the regime, but by, let's say, terrorist groups, or they just happened to die. And I was also interested in the space of a garden, how it turned from something happy and something that it's very alive to a place of death and mourning. So I started collecting stories and news clips and footage of burials happening in gardens. And then I decided that I wanted to do a piece.
Tania ist interessiert an den Geschichten Einzelner, über die Zahlen, Fakten und Berichte hinaus, in denen Syrer oder auch Flüchtlinge aus Syrien eher Opfer als Widerstandskämpfer im Krieg sind. Gerade dieser Aspekt erscheint bedeutend in einer Gesellschaft, die sich häufig nur als Geber für die armen Nehmer versteht. Tania gibt diesen Menschen eine Stimme und Gehör, die in immer mehr, immer schneller publizierten und dadurch weniger präsenten Nachrichten untergehen.
There's a lot of talk about Syria, but mainly people do not, like in all big catastrophic events, ordinary people's stories are not part of the discussion. They're, as you said, numbers and their statistics. They're not the real people behind. But also, as this document, mainly the first few months and the first year of the uprising, this is very much about the uprising. This is very much about people who went out to ask for freedom and to demand the end of an authoritarian regime that oppressed them for more than 40 years. And I think it's important to remember that, because people now look at Syria and think it's a civil war and think of Syrians as just pure victims. They do not see them as powerful people or empowered people who had a cause, like a political cause. They actually wanted freedom. They weren't hungry. They just wanted freedom. And I think there's some sort of crediting that we need, that we owe them.
In Deutschland wird der Tod oft tabuisiert, wird ausgelagert und bürokratisiert. Der Tod, die Arten zu trauern, sind eng mit der jeweiligen Kultur verbunden. In Mexiko wird ein Totenfest gefeiert, in Russland etwa Leichname tagelang aufgebahrt und im Islam gibt es eine Sargpflicht. Das private Begräbnis in Deutschland, etwa im Garten, ist in den meisten Bundesländern verboten. Jean-Paul Sartre schrieb einmal, dass man im Tode frei sei. Tatsächlich aber ist der Tod immer noch Sache des Staates und manchmal auch ein florierendes Geschäft.
It's true that some cultures deal with death differently, and I know from some sort of research and discussions that they used to have this tradition of doing layover or something when a dead person stays in the house for like 2 days and people visit them and they kind of live with the dead for a bit to be able to mourn, and that it's happening less and less, and now it's very kind of removed from everyday life, and it's very organized. And obviously it's different to the amount of death that is happening now in Syria is enormous, and it's much more than anyone could deal with, and it's affecting a whole generation and a lot of people around the world. But it's very interesting to think about that while taking this piece to different cultures, because how people relate to death is very different. And we know some cultures in Nepal, they have a kind of closer relationship. I think people, the act of mourning, of thinking about loss, is a very international thing, and I think people feel it a lot. And I've noticed that a lot of people have suddenly put themselves in the shoes or in the place of these characters who are very far away, and for the first time they kind of see their stories as stories of people close to them, because they feel like they lied on their grave. They have some sort of embodied knowledge of their story, and they place themselves in the story by writing a letter, choosing their words. Obviously there's a lot to think about in relation to this, what I call embodied knowledge, is that when you know something by being there, by living it, as opposed to just thinking. And this is what I like about this sort of form. But definitely showing work about Syria and Germany has a lot of different layers, because there is this sort of two cultures that are kind of meeting each other in very difficult times and a very difficult kind of context. And there is the power dynamic, but there is also the empathy and all of these different layers that it's happening on stage. And I find that very interesting. And I find it that people really want to know and are eager to know more or to understand what's happening. And this is very interesting.
Diese Stimmen der Toten, die ewig werden, erwecken ein Memento Mori, kein Leben für immer als Untote. In dieser scheinbar schnelllebigen Zeit wird uns zu oft der Wert des Lebens abgesprochen. Ich frage mich, wie Syrer mit dem Tod, der untrennbar zum Leben gehört, mit Verlusten im Krieg umgehen, wie die Familien der Verstorbenen, deren Geschichte in dieser Installation erzählt wird, reagiert haben auf Tanjas Arbeit.
It's interesting for me, but I think people who told the stories, I think Syrians at the moment are very used to tell stories. It's the most documented uprising ever happened in the world. I think people are very keen, especially when they broke this kind of barriers of fear from the dictator. They documented with a passion. They documented everything. They documented burials. They documented stories. They documented atrocities. They document a lot, especially on social media. And people are used to tell stories. So from people who we approached, no one said, I don't want to tell stories. A couple of problems happened, blocks happened when people were too emotional to write. One of the people who's a young filmmaker who we talk about here, called Basir Shadi, has a lot of very close friends, especially in the activist and artist scene. And two people who wanted to write his stories had to stop and couldn't. One, his own kind of fiance, one of his close friends. So this is only the difficult task of actually wanting to reduce a whole lifetime of an incredible person into 15 minutes sound piece. This is kind of an impossible task of doing it. But everyone thought it was an important thing to do, because it's important to tell people stories, and because it's not about making them heroes, and it's not just about making them victims. It's about saying how they are, like dreams, problems, issues, just giving them a voice.
So eine Installation erfordert das eigene Einfühlen in andere, also Empathie und das Wissen, was es bewirken kann. Warum hat sie sich dafür entschieden und nicht fürs klassische Theater etwa?
Like it just suddenly happened in my life. Like I didn't follow it up. I just felt like something that I wanted to do, and I studied theater, and then I moved to London and I did a performance. Because I think it's also from the journey that I had from being like one of the generation of people who were born in the war, and then kind of surviving into things without being very much aware about what they want, and like it wasn't a normal childhood when you go do activities and then decide what you're good on. It was all part of survival, I think, all of these decisions. But now that I'm an adult and I take intentional choices in life, I'm very much interested in the interactive work where the audience is not just passive and watching other people interact, but they're actually part of the process. And it's not just about being thrown into games and things, but more about finding the political potential of interactivity, how much you can take decisions, you can put yourself in, put your thoughts, challenge each other's comfort zone through interactive pieces. And I was never interested in theater as a space, mainly because I like also real places that have their own history. And I do a lot of work in public space and in the city, and I'm interested in that. I'm not interested in kind of safe environments that are closed and neutral.
Wie wichtig ist es für Sie, über Gender zu reden, inmitten der vielen Diskurse? Was erachtet Tanja, die sich als feministische Künstlerin begreift, als wichtige Themen?
I mean, I think the question of gender is a very important one in all culture. Though I do understand that it has been used to vilify other cultures. You know, people like Hillary Clinton have used the gender question to justify the war on Afghanistan, for example. We know that, and there have been a lot of talk in feminist theory and activism on the question of feminisms, on the question of women of color, on the question of challenging or being critical of the what they call the colonial feminism or the feminism that is only for white women. It's very true, and it's very important to ask these questions and challenge them. I think the reaction shouldn't be that we think that we are post-feminism or we shouldn't talk about feminism, because it's still very much alive. I mean, women are still an oppressed gender, whether we like it or not, and in different culture, in different ways. Even in the UK, women are paid 20% less than men in most job. In Lebanon, there is a different dynamics. In Egypt, they're being raped in the streets, mass raped, and it's also part of a state violence forced on them to oppress people or force them out of politics. I think the fact that feminism is being mainly white women rhetoric and shouldn't make us feel that we're outside this discussion, but we should actually claim it and talk about it the way we want. I see myself as a feminist artist, of course, and because it's another concentration of power that I think of. I'm very interested in how power is negotiated and how it works. And gender is a place where power is always, you know, it's always present. So
Simone de Beauvoir or Judith Butler?
I mean, I always kind of would like to read Simone de Beauvoir much more than I do. Especially that I read French, and I have a few of her books always kind of lying next to my bed to be able to read them, to force myself to read them. But I also think that as a contemporary, Judith Butler has given us a lot to think about, especially in terms of linking this gender question to the politics question and also in relation to the Middle East. And I think it's, we're very indebted for her to talk about that.
Welche aktuellen Projekte von ihr laden erneut zum Mitmachen, Denken oder Fühlen ein?
I am a co-founder of a collective in Beirut called Dictaphone Group. And at the moment we are working on a city walk in Beirut. It's called the Topography of Descent. And it takes the audience into different layers of the city, but also talks about the changes in the urban environment, but also about kind of invisibilized group or marginalized group in the city. And this is opening quite soon, so we're currently researching it.